When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Before we get started, I have to say this podcast would not have happened had it not been for Anchor. If you're a member of my Patreon and watched my video series 1 week to air, you would know just how stressful the week leading up to the premiere was, and Anchor saved my life. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And if you're like me and your editing skills are almost non-existent, this was huge. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so you can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. This podcast is also brought to you by Green Regimen. Guys, you have to try their plant-based protein powder. It's amazing. So I'm not vegan, but I'm lactose intolerant, and I've tried a bunch of vegan powder. It's all gross to me. The beef-based kind aren't that much better, but this stuff is legit. My favorite combination is to add a scoop of their chocolate protein powder to PB Fit and a half cup of oats. It's like peanut butter cup cereal. It's amazing. I have it every single day. So go to my show notes, click on the link at checkout, put the promo code Noah. Yeah, shocker, it's my name. Put Noah for 10% off. There's free shipping for qualified orders. Do it, you won't regret it. Now let's get to the show. Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Coffee Time Podcast with Noah Kinsey. I am your host, Noah Kinsey, and this is the podcast that humanizes people. This is, I would say, definitely one of the most important episodes I've had thus far. It's with Amber McCutcheon. She has a nonprofit that helps people who have experienced sexual assault. We had just an amazing conversation. Started off a little rocky just because we both had technical difficulties, which we'll briefly reference in the episode. But this, like I said, this was a really important episode, I think, for a lot of reasons. In the past, I've had a couple episodes on domestic violence. We've briefly touched on this. But this episode, we're actually able to dive in a lot deeper from someone who has had personal experience and has used that to empower herself to help others, which is amazing. That, well, I have so much respect for that. And she was very gracious. And I really look forward to you hearing this. Before we get going, got to do my usual shout outs. Shout out to my editor, Michael Kinsey, no relation, but he is like a brother to me. He makes the show sound better than it would if I was left to do the editing. Just fantastic guy. I really appreciate what he does. Thank you to Patreon members, Cody Yaw, Tracy Hughes, Jake Valenta. You guys are amazing. Definitely check out the Patreon if you want a shout out. There are certain levels that get that for the show, but there's a lot of really great things to be part of the Patreon community. So check in the show notes for that. see what we have in store. There's exclusive videos there, and we're just going to be adding more content as we go. But without further ado, let's get to this important conversation with Amber McCutcheon. Thank you so much for being on this show, Amber. I really appreciate it.
I am excited to be here, Noah, and have a conversation with you today.
So we're going to jump into it, but just so the audience knows, we had just the most, in my opinion, the most amazing conversation until I realized Zoom had decided to not record what we talked about. So we're gonna take it from there. But technology isn't always our friends, especially when you're not the best at it like myself. So I appreciate you, Amber, for being patient. And yeah, so before today, we had just very briefly talked. I had reached out to a community of people saying, like, I wanted to have guests on the show, like, kind of gave a brief recap of what my show's about, and see, you know, who would fit and who I feel like would be really good for my audience. And you are one of them that was the top of the list, because what you talked about, you know, I've talked about it in previous episode. I've had a couple about domestic violence, and just different ways for people to think about it. Like, I have an episode where I talk about domestic violence and suggest four things people stop doing in order to minimize kind of the problem with domestic violence because of how people respond to those who come out and admit that it happened to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you'd like, I would really appreciate it to once again, give a recap, you know, kind of your story. You already told me before that, you know, you're really comfortable talking about it. Yes. You're not squeamish, and it's, you know, it is a very important conversation, and I love it so much. I don't mind hearing it twice, but this time we're going to record it for posterity. So
awesome. Where we can share it with others.
Exactly.
So one of the reasons I wanted to be on Noah's podcast was the key line that he said he wanted to humanize people. And that really caught my attention. I work with survivors of sexual abuse, misuse, and trauma. And I've done that since 2010, when I really just kind of hit my own wall. I was looking for help. I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. My dad was my perpetrator, and I have memories as early as 2. I'm an only child, and I grew up as an army brat in Frankfurt, Germany for quite some time until I moved to Southeast Missouri, where I still reside today. And I say that because of where I live is one of those places that kind of everybody knows everybody. And as I opened up about my abuse, there were people who had a really hard time wrapping their heads around it, and they wanted to turn the other cheek, or they wanted to minimize it. And so it really just compounded the guilt and shame that I carried around. And so, you know, as I got to 2010 and my mom passed away in January of 2010, here I was, an only child. My parents had stayed together through all of this, and I was left with my dad in my life. Now, at this point in time, I had 7 kids already. I have 12 currently. And I had said from the beginning, like when I started becoming a mother, we put some boundaries in place with my dad because nobody wants to be an orphan, right? Like, I don't care how dysfunctional your family is. Nobody wants to be like, hey, I want to be an orphan and not really have any place to belong. And so we had allowed my parents to become grandparents to our children. But even when we had our oldest, we went and we said, we don't ever want him left alone with our daughter. He's never allowed to change her diaper. And he's never allowed to see her naked at all. And so as time went on, I didn't change those boundaries at all. Our kids never did sleepovers there, you know, and my mother was an incredible grandmother to our children. But in 2010, as she passed away, and I realized that I still had him in my life, and I really just wanted to not have anything to do with him, I kind of hit my wall, because I realized that as long as my mother was alive, I hadn't dealt with the after effects of my trauma. So later on that year, about September, I went to a place that caters to women. thinking that they would know of something for survivors. And instead they put some curriculum in my hands and said, hey, would you consider being a teacher? And I was like, I am a hot mess. And you want me to what? And so I took that curriculum home that they gave me at that point in time. And I spent some time in prayer and I considered it because it's not what I wanted to do. I felt like damaged goods and broken beyond repair. And I was tired of being miserable, but I had been miserably content for way too long, if that makes sense. Miserably content comes when you're wearing the mask to make everybody else happy. When you say you're okay and you're not okay, you know, right up before this, I was a school board member and owned my own business and all of these other things, really active in our community. And nobody had an idea of what, really how broken I was. And so as a mom, I realized that I wanted better for my kids. I didn't even think that I was worth the work at that point in time. But, so I began the journey then. That's really where HOPE, it stands for healing our past experiences, was conceived, was that September of 2010. That now has become a nonprofit in 2017, where I created my own curriculum and work with survivors of sexual abuse, misuse, and trauma around the world. I enjoy being able to take the very things that were meant to destroy my life and bring beautiful things, healing that affects not only the person that it happened to, but it overflows into our family. You know, the only thing that a perpetrator fears is confidence, but along with our innocence, when it's stripped away, is our confidence. So we don't even know how to communicate what goes on with us. And as a child, like, you look to the adults in your life to establish truth and normal. So the normal in my life, there were so many that if I would to name them off, I don't want to trigger anybody, that's not my heart. But there were things that were like, now as an adult, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, family movie night included a list of movies from the 80s that are still not yet rated. So that would tell you quite a bit, you know, but that was the normal in my family. And so I really believe that it was a lot of those things that kind of desensitized and normalized the many things that I went through as a child.
Did you, now the small town that you live in, or the small community, I too am from a small community in Michigan, where, you know, everyone knows everything about everybody, you know, even I'll have my mom will call and say, hey, do you remember this person? And I've never heard of this person, but I still get an update on this person. Right. You know, one of those, did you stay in the small community that you grew up with?
Yeah. So I lived in Frankfurt, Germany, from 79 to 89. And then I came to Southeast Missouri, where actually my grandparents were at. Both sets of my grandparents lived in this community. And I started sixth grade here, and I still live around in this area. And so a lot of the extended family was all here in this community and known, like the family, like people know everybody. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was 11 whenever we were getting ready to move from Frankfurt to Missouri. And I had come to the realization that what was going on in my family was not the norm for everybody's family. I don't remember exactly like what brought that to light. I remember there's some conversations that happened at school or how you become pregnant. I remember thinking in fifth grade that I was pregnant because of the things, coming to an understanding of things that had happened at school, you know, like being educated through some things and then knowing what was happening at home and then having this, oh my gosh, thought and being terrified as a fifth grader. And I didn't know how to communicate that because who do you tell, you know? And, but I remember having a conversation with my mom right before we were getting ready to move to the States. And so the idea was that I was going to come back in June of 89. And then my parents would come back after my dad retired in like October, November of 89. Well, in May, a couple of weeks before I was supposed to move to the States, I remember being on the PX parking lot with my mama, and my dad had went in to buy electronics, and he always took forever to go buy electronics. And I knew that this was my opportunity to talk to my mom. And I don't remember what crumb I gave her, but I gave her some little piece of somebody being inappropriate with me, right? And she was just so warm and so compassionate. And she was guessing neighbors. She, you know, she was guessing people who had access to me. Mm. And that went on for a few minutes. But as soon as I said, that it was my dad, her shoulders went back and she got very cold with me. And she said, everyone has a skeleton in the closet and that's where this is going to stay. And we're never talking about this again.
Whoa.
And I remember just being so heartbroken. Like in my mind, my mom was going to ditch my dad. We were going to move to the States and I never had to deal with it again. That was not my reality. By no means. And because I had opened up about this, both of my parents ended up coming to the States for a couple of weeks to make sure that I just kind of kept my mouth shut. And then they went back and finished out in Frankfurt, Germany. So my grandparents at that point in time had been warned about the things that I had said, but everybody was still kind of like sweeping it under the carpet and just didn't know what to do with it. So my mom was the first person at 11. I actually met my husband at the age of 13 and he was 15 and we've been together ever since, which makes us sound really old. I don't know. We've been together for 30 years, but he is just a voice of reason. He's my biggest cheerleader and a behind the scenes support all the time. And I'm so thankful for him. But I remember being 14 and opening up about my abuse once again, and family services or CPS, CFS is all referred to a little bit differently across the nation, got involved. And because I didn't cope in the ways that they thought I should have coped, I was an honor roll student and I excelled in a lot of different things. And I wasn't out just giving myself to just everybody. Mm. I didn't meet their criteria for what they thought somebody should have reacted to. And so they put me back in my home and they told me to learn to live with it. That was Whoa. The words from them. And I remember at the age of 14, that was really probably the darkest season of my life. And wanting the pain to end one way or another. And I had a plan. And I think that if it wasn't for the reasoning at that point in time, my boyfriend, you know, where I could hear like his voice of reasoning in my head, I would have been done. Because, you know, I had already looked for my mom to help me. And then I already looked for the system to help me. And everybody who was supposed to be the help had let me down. And so I did what so many others do, and you stuff it down and you just don't deal with it. And you go through the motions of life, sometimes for decades, because I have ladies who have been in their 70s who come to me and have never lived in freedom and have never overcome their past experiences because nobody ever knew how to come alongside and help them really overcome their past experiences. And so I'm like, I don't care what season of life you're in. Like, healing is beautiful. It's actually stunning on anybody. And it's not just for ladies, it's for guys as well. And it doesn't have to define us. We don't have to live with the after effects. You know, we can make those wounds heal into scars. And a scar and a wound is very different. The wound, you know, you're oozing and it's infected and it evokes emotion and we get overwhelmed with that. But a scar is something like, it doesn't change the fact that it happened. It absolutely happened in my life, but I can tell you all about it. We can revisit it and it doesn't evoke those emotions in me because it's healed. Mm-hmm. And that's my desire for anybody who has went through sexual abuse, misuse, or trauma, is that knowing that healing is absolutely possible. And if you're concerned about your kids, guess what? You need to heal, because that's part of prevention, is being, and we can't give what we don't have as parents. You know, I couldn't give confidence to my kids when I was still this broken, hot mess. It had to start with me. So.
Wow. Yeah. That's just really tragic. Like, it blows me away that so many people, I mean, it does, but it doesn't, like that so many people just kind of wanted to move along. Just, you know, I think that people have this sort of, it's not survivor's guilt, but it's this feeling of, well, if it was real or, you know, if this was something that actually happened, like I would have noticed, I would have done something about it. And how could I have been really good friends with this person if they were even capable of doing this? This sense of denial, or even like with your family, it's out of embarrassment. Like, how is this going to make me look if this comes out? And I mean, all it does is damage the actual victim, the person being assaulted. And we need to stop doing that, because I love what you do as your nonprofit, but I would like it if the systems that are put in place to help with it actually did what they're supposed to and protect the kids. I mean, the fact that I'm sorry that you got good grades, like, I don't think that should disqualify you from being protected.
Right.
That right. just
well, when statistics are 1 in 3 by the time we're 18 for girls, and 1 in 6 for the time the guys are 18 are experiencing some kind of sexual trauma in their life, the numbers are astounding. And I remember being in high school and, you know, specifically sitting in a class and looking around that class and being, I was a cheerleader. Like I was regional officer, you know, because one of my coping skills was an overachiever. Like sure. that's a, people praise that coping skill, but I was doing it because I wanted to be wanted and accepted.
Yeah.
Because I felt rejected and damaged, you know? And so, I had a doctor once ask me, how can being an overachiever ever be a bad thing? And I had to pause and think for just a second. And I said, because you never get to where you're headed. Because whenever when you reach this goal, then the next, it wasn't ever good enough. Like you're always setting it higher and higher and higher. So like you always feel less than, you're never good enough. That's not healthy in any form or fashion. Like, is it great to have good goals? Absolutely. Set them goals and go for it. They help move us forward along in life. But thinking that those define you or that then you're finally going to be loved and accepted, that's the non-healthy part yeah. of that. You know, and so I remember sitting there in that class in high school and looking around on a particular day and thinking nobody else would understand my crazy, like my normal at home. So even though my dad has stopped physically touching me when we moved to the States, he would still make comments. Even at the age of 32, when I talked about my mom, you know, passing away, he would still make comments. Here I am, a mom of 7 kiddos, and he would still make comments about my body that a father would never say about a daughter. And I knew that it made me feel uncomfortable. I knew that I didn't like it, but I didn't understand how to communicate that. And it's called psychological sexual abuse. And when somebody has already had you in that form or fashion, then it becomes a mind game because they still want to show dominance over you. So they play with your mind and they say these comments because they show that they did have that, you know, I can have that. And that's where like, you're objectified in that. You're not sure. humanized. You know, my dad decided to not be my dad when he decided to do those things to me. When he violated me, he no longer was my dad. Like biologically, yes, he's my dad. But a father would never look at a daughter and say, hey, you know what? I can objectify and use that to self-satisfy myself. It became all about him and not about being a father. And so that's where, you know, when you talk about humanizing people, like anybody who uses somebody in that form or fashion, they've already dehumanized, they've already objectified. And so, you know, part of my heart is being a voice for those who don't even know how to have a voice in this dark place, you know, because a lot of them are just bound by guilt and shame. I know I carried my dad's guilt and shame around for decades because I thought I was responsible in some form or fashion. You know, we don't hear about how perpetrators have usually over 400 victims in their lifetime. Like, it's not a small number. And how does that keep happening? It's people staying silent when something just doesn't feel right. And they're like, no, that person would never. And some of the most trusting places would be churches. They're so naive overall and be like, oh, you're a warm body and you show interest and you're really good with kids. Let me put you in this position. And I'm like, we have got to stop being deceived, yeah. you know, because perpetrators will put themselves in position to feed their addiction. And perpetrators are not always men and they're not always women, but there are children who are perpetrating children. You know, I often, when I teach and speak across the nation and I do different conferences and I'm talking to parents, I'll say, when you're contemplating having a sleepover or allowing your child to go to someone else's house, ask this question. Do you trust them enough to trust them with the innocence of your child? Because how you answer that then should determine how you proceed. Mm-hmm. It's not because, well, this person may be offended if I don't allow my kid to go to that sleepover, or well, maybe I could let him go to the birthday party, but I don't really want my kid to go to the sleepover, but like, I would feel bad if I didn't let, no. As parents, it's our yeah. job to protect.
Yeah.
And when your children understand why we have the boundaries in place, it's not that we don't trust our children, you know, because I'll tell my children, listen, I trust you and I love you. I just don't trust everybody else. So I'm not going to give them access to you. And my kids don't live in a bubble. Like they understand the real world. You know, we are a large family with 12 children who homeschool and live in rural Missouri. So there's a whole lot of stigmas that we break. because they're like, do you know my mom? Do you understand what she talks about? Because they're not naive or sheltered in that aspect. But we also don't live in fear. Like, you have to raise others up to be confident. You know, we talked about, you know, what does that look like in having the language skills to be able to communicate that? Well, vagina and penis are not bad words. They're body parts.
Yeah.
You know, and so the first half of our children, I raised with slang words because that's what I was raised with. I was raised with slang words. And then the bottom half of our children, like, I had become this confident person. I had already experienced this healing in my life, and I wanted them to be able to communicate clearly. So I think about my 7-year-old son when he was like, not even two. And I'm changing his diaper and he's like, I got a penis. And I was like, yeah, buddy, you got a penis. And it was said in such a way that, like, I got a belly button or I've got an elbow or whatever else. Like, there was no hesitation in him being able to communicate his body part, you know? And so you take that when somebody's trying to touch him inappropriately and you hear then, hey, don't touch my penis. And they go, whoa, wait a minute. That kid can communicate.
Yeah.
You know, and so I used to do daycare. I owned and operated my own daycare. And I think of, I've heard this story. There's a little girl who comes and it's a circle time. And the little girl like tugs at the teacher and she's like, hey, my daddy ate my cookie. And she's like, well, honey, it's circle time. And she just really dismisses her. And, you know, like, why is that a big deal that daddy ate her cookie? Well, girls sometimes use that slang for their vagina, their cookie. And so when she was trying to communicate that her dad was violating her, it wasn't received by those who could intervene because she wasn't equipped with the proper language skills to be able to communicate with confidence. So some people are like, well, what if my kid, what if we're in this store and my kid just blurts out vagina? And I was like, what if you are? Yeah. Well, what if people think bad? And I'm like, no, they're probably, they may giggle and that's okay. Well, like, your kid's going to be confident in being able to communicate whatever it is about their body. And I would rather build my kids up with confidence than to worry about people pleasing around me.
Yeah. Because when it comes to those words there, and, you know, it's definitely an American thing to have shame associated with conversations about those body parts. So
it
common sense would dictate that if there's shame around that body part already, and someone touches that body part, maybe they're going to feel shame about telling someone about it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That, yeah, that's really important. And I think teaching body autonomy is also very important. One of the things, I have two daughters, and one of the things that I've talked to my wife about, like, if, you know, we talk to our daughters about, like, this is your body. Like, knowing nobody should come in. You shouldn't grab other people just by even by their shoulders or try and do anything that someone hasn't consented to. That's their body. This is your body. And I told my wife, I'm like, oh man, if we're ever called to the principal's office, I don't even know if that's a thing nowadays, but if we're ever called in there because my daughter fought back and some boy who came and like hit her, and I hear the other parents say, well, boys will be boys. Ooh, I have some words to say about that.
Absolutely.
Because that
boys are young men, and thinking that boys will be boys grows into a mentality where men can hit as well. That's not honorable. That's not okay. No. You know, I have 7 girls and I have 5 boys. And do my boys wrestle? Yes. But do my boys beat? No. You know what I'm saying? So like, there's a difference. Our 4 youngest are boys. And so the older girls were like, Mom, you never let us wrestle like that. And I'm like, listen, you never offered to wrestle like that. It's a whole other dynamics.
Now. Right.
But they're not mean to each other. And I think there's got to be an understanding that, like, those phrases that people throw out, you know, well, boys will be boys, or this will be that, or whatever else. And I'm like, it dismisses responsibility.
Yeah.
And your responsibility as a parent is to raise kids who are compassionate and passionate. You know, like, are they passionate about people? Because I have some kids who are really passionate about people. Are they compassionate and considerate of others? Like, it should break your heart. Like, how many times would we hear on the news or on social media, because, like, oh my gosh, you could hear it on every platform, but, like, we hear about kids being raped and our jaws don't drop anymore because it's such a normalcy now.
Yeah.
And so one of the organizations I absolutely have a great appreciation for is OUR. It's Operation Underground Railroad with Tim Ballard. And he is a voice that is bringing light into really dark situations. But like, it is not child pornography. It is child rape videos, mm-hmm. you know, and I work with some survivors of sex trafficking as well. And I'm like, their pimps are still profiting off of their sex. Like they're still being. And so I go into public schools and I'll teach on healthy relationships. And I'm like, you know, trafficking doesn't necessarily look like you being kidnapped and taken off somewhere else. Like you can be trafficked in your own community, but when your sex is being used as a commodity for somebody else's gain, there you go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we see kids who are being trafficked by their parents to pay rent or for drugs or whatever else. And I'm like, this is going on in every community. There is not a community that exists that doesn't have this going on, but people do not want their eyes opened up to it because once you see it, you cannot unsee it. And they don't want their eyes open because they don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
What's the solution? What's our next step? And if you feel helpless, you don't like the way that makes you feel. So then we're like, we just don't want to go there.
Yep. We want to just look the other way. And
it's
very frustrating because once again, all this does is further perpetrate what's happening. And
absolutely,
you know, even with, you know, and I did talk about it in one of my domestic violence episodes with the Boys Will Be Boys. All this does is this teaches young girls like
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This boy hits you because he likes you so much. Well, what do you think she's going to grow up thinking? What do you think she's going to
absolutely
domestic violence with? And also the whole of like, it puts the blame on her. If she wasn't so likable, she wouldn't have gotten hit.
Oh yeah. And
it also shows that a woman's body isn't hers because
absolutely
it's okay. He did it. He likes.
Well, and how many times do we hear, what was she wearing when that took place? Excuse me?
Yep.
So it mattered like what she was wearing, and that controlled whether or not what you did to her was okay. Same mentality.
Yeah. It's just so many things. I'm so glad you do what you do, because there's just so many things that have been normalized for so long. I mean, we wonder why people don't come forward. But when they do, they're put under the microscope. Every little micro action, everything they're wearing, everything they've ever done. Maybe they have asked a guy out that was someone completely different. Well, they're forward. So therefore, this must happen at this time. And I think that is what you're saying, where people just really want to dismiss it or minimize it because they don't know what to do. They don't know personally how to fix it. And if they have to identify it's a problem, how can they continue living the way that they have and not do anything without them feeling terrible?
Right.
Once again, it's a self-preservation that does no good for people who are genuinely suffering.
Right. Absolutely.
Very, very frustrating. So one of the questions I had is, you were saying, you know, one of the ways that you would cope with what was happening is by overachieving and really trying to be the best of the best to validate your worth because you were feeling worthless. What were some things you know, that later on when you were realizing the trauma that you had suffered, what were some things that you had to unlearn or
deal? Oh my gosh. One of the ways that like had become a normal in my life was my mom would compliment me and she would say, Amber, you know, you did a really great job, but. And so that was a norm in my family, right? So like you may have complimented me, but whatever came after the but took away any good that you just said. So it further impacted that worthless in my life. Well, then as a mom, you know, how many times do we grow up and we're like, oh, I'll never, and fill in the blank, something our parents did that we didn't want to repeat, right? And I found myself doing that with my kids. I mean, with not the intention of wanting to tear them down, but I would be like, oh my gosh, you did a really great job, but you kind of missed a spot there on the table. And so I had to like retrain my brain and learn to like genuinely give that compliment. That was part of building up the confidence in my own kids, you know, and stop with that negative, like not wrap it back around with a negative. That was one of the things, but there were also like overeating became a coping skill in my life because I thought, I guess my mentality was that if I had gained enough weight that his comments would stop about my body, because even at age 32, my dad was still making comments about my body and inappropriate things. And so if I would lose weight, his comments would increase. Mm. So if I would gain weight, the comments would decrease. So like, there are so many who like wear their skin as a shield because they just don't want anybody or their clothes. You overdress or you dress skimpy. Like I went through different phases of my life, you know, and there would be times where I thought that I would dress in a certain way to attract attention to myself. And I thought it was positive, but really I wasn't controlling the attention. I just don't want to be seen for who I was. And then there are other times that like, I would dress like a tent, you know, I'd have this big old sloppy sweatshirt because you don't want to be noticed. You know, you don't want to know that you have a figure at all. And so there are so many things that I've, you know, had to figure out what is healthy and what is normal. And so really in like 2010, I started my healing journey as far as like overcoming my past experiences of sexual abuse. But really in 2011, my husband and I like began creating a new normal when it came to the way that we are husband and wife and the way that we parent our kids. Because we realized that the things that I had went through as a child didn't just affect us behind closed doors. I was actually sexually anorexic, which is a whole nother topic. And I talk about sexual expressions and different things like that. So the fact that we have 12 kids and I was sexually anorexic is a whole nother testimony in itself.
That's a dozen immaculate conceptions right there.
Exactly. Pretty much. Say we could go literally months and I would touch her once. And the thing is, my mom had fertility issues and I've never had regular cycles. So it's a whole like ha-ha's, a lot of behind the scenes that we laugh about because people's perception of who we are and what our life was like is totally not on point, you know? And so we laugh about it, but you know, we are in this as a team together. And one of the things is like, I realized that by not dealing with my abuse, my husband is an honorable man. He has a great amount of integrity and work ethic. He is a provider and he is a protector. He's like 6'2". He's a blacksmith and a mechanic. He has a goatee. He's a man's man, you know? And so he's everything as a father that I would have wished I had. And I get to see that with our kids, and our kids respect him. They love their daddy. And like, it's a beautiful thing to be able to see what I wish I would have had as my own childhood. And so in that, whenever we got to like 2011, I realized that like the things from my past, like I said, didn't just affect the behind the closed doors, but because I would limit or withhold my love or my praise, it was all coping skills in life. And I would do that because I didn't want to be touched. I dealt with a lot of rage, which comes from your triggers, and you don't know what's going to trigger you. You know, it could be a touch, a taste, a smell, any of your five senses. And then all of a sudden you're triggered back into things that happened that you had no control over. And so it was working through all of that and being patient with one another that like, I didn't realize that my messages to my husband made him feel less than. And so like, when I look at who he was at like the 2010, 2011 years, you know, it was kind of like a puppy who had been kicked. And because I had rejected him so many times, and it wasn't that I didn't want to I have always loved my husband and he has always loved me. But through my actions of coping with life and just, I thought that every touch equaled sex, and sex wasn't this beautiful thing for me at that point in time because it was very distorted and damaged from my childhood, that I wouldn't even allow him to just kind of like come up and put his arms around me because I thought he was going to want sex. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not who we are today. And I'm thankful for that. But you had to go back and relearn that, like, you can have boundaries inside your marriage and not every touch equals sex. And so, like, you can hold hands and you can cuddle on the couch and you can all these, and you can take safety. Like, he's my safe person. Like, I can breathe and lay my head on his chest and be like, I know it's good because he's got this kind of thing. And so there was a whole lot of things. It wasn't just me, even though I'm the one who had been impacted initially by that. Like, it affected every relationship in my life, including my kids, my husband, my creator, everything, my friends. Oh my gosh. And so I didn't even know how to be a friend. You know, I would keep all my friends at an arm's length away because if you really knew me, would you love me? If you knew how broken, you know, like, I was afraid of rejection. And so I was always like cordial to everybody and kind to everybody, but like, I didn't have deep, authentic relationships. I do now, but I had to learn how to become that friend in order to have those friends, you know? Yeah. And so I think that anybody desires, everybody has an innate sense to want to be wanted and want to be loved. Like, we are just that way. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that learning how to do that in a healthy way, that we are absolutely worth setting boundaries for, that we don't have to settle for boys will be boys, or that this will be like, no, I can have boundaries in this that I'm worth protecting, and that it's okay for me to say no or whatever those things are. But I have to know that I have that value, because once boundaries are crossed in your life, it is so incredibly difficult to even begin putting them in place. But it's part of the healing journey.
Yeah, it sounds like you have an amazing guy, which is...
I have an incredible husband.
That's great. You know, one of the things that we talked about before it recorded is just this concept of did someone, like when it comes to kids or even looking back in life, did someone make you feel icky? You know, that was one of the things that put out. And yeah. I think there are some situations that I'm blanking. Oh, I got it. I was blanking there for a second. So there's a new documentary that just came out on Netflix called Bad Vegan, where I don't know if you've heard of this at all.
I have not yet.
It's wild. About this woman who had this raw vegan restaurant in New York. She got involved with this guy. They ended up getting married. He was this crazy dude who kind of took her on this journey of, I don't want to overgeneralize, but there's a certain group of vegans that are kind of new-agey spiritual, where they're open to certain unconventional spiritual stuff. And this guy definitely made it seem like some of that was going on for her to wire him money, and ended up wiring him like $1.7 million, I think. And then they run all this stuff.
Yeah. But
this is a long-winded way for me to say, by the end of the documentary, she mentioned something that he did at the very start where, and throughout the whole documentary, you heard their phone conversations because she had recorded it, because he was definitely really pushy about her tens of thousands of dollars wiring it. But she had mentioned at the end that when they first were together, there was a night where he's like, I need you to do whatever I say with no questions. So he like blindfolded her, and she didn't really get too far into it, but it was basically definitely a night of her doing whatever. And afterwards he like apologized, said he'd never do it again. But then once again, leads to all this wire transfers. Right. And, you know, I watched it with my wife and it blew me away. And I said, that was the test to see if that was like the little thing to see if she's going to be open to what he's planning on doing. And
absolutely
kind of to that point, there are certain things that when you look back, you maybe it didn't escalate to assault or to mm-hmm. being violated mm-hmm. or molested, but definitely there are moments where you're thinking, okay, that was actually a test to see if I was, I don't know if this is a proper term, but groomable.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that would be a term we would use in that. So when we were talking earlier before I started recording, I had talked about, I've actually wrote a kid's book and it's entitled A Girl Who Loves to Smile. But in that I have this line that's prominent and it's like, has there ever been anybody who made you feel ucky? And the idea is that you can use this book. It could be parents, it could be counselors, it could be, you know, teachers of any sorts or whatever else, to really just have a conversation with a child, because it's hard to navigate conversations without really leading them. You know, I remember having conversations with some of my kids, like, has anybody ever touched you inappropriately? And for one of our kids, somebody had, and like, as a mom who had experienced stuff herself, like, that's your worst nightmare, that your kid ever goes through anything that you went through. And so it actually was by another child, not in our home. It wasn't a sibling. I'll put that out there. But I won't share that child's story for sake of confidentiality for them. Sure. But knowing that I've experienced the impact on a lot of different sides. And I thought that I had did my part to protect, you know, they weren't allowed to do sleepovers. They didn't go to other places or whatever else. But like, when you're talking with a child, you can use the term ucky and ask them, has there ever been anybody who made you feel ucky? And then ask them, well, who? Well, how did they make you feel ucky? It's not, you can't go in and ask, was there anybody? You know, like, it's your tone. It's the way that you set on, sure. you know, you set with them and you ask them. You have to be calm. But also, if they trust you with something and they say yes, you have to be ready to respond with, thank you so much for trusting me. I appreciated that you shared that with me. You know, if it's somebody that's your child, like, I love you, I believe you, you know, these are reaffirming, because their worst fear, no matter, like, I don't care how old you are, is like disgust and disbelief. Yeah. If they have come to the understanding that what went on really wasn't okay, they're expecting disgust and disbelief from whoever they're trusting that crumb to, right? And so I think that that's just a simple way that you can navigate conversations. If you just had any kind of like gut feeling, you know, we talk about that. I think people are like, it just didn't set right. That was my line. It just didn't set right with me, you know, and something just didn't set right in my gut. And so follow that. You know, if you think that something's maybe gone on with one of your children or somebody that you, that is in your realm, it doesn't have to be your child. Don't be captive to fear and think that your comfortableness is worth more than getting them the help that they need. Mm. Like,
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Push past it. Push past the fear and help be a voice for those who don't have a voice.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love that. And hopefully you'll come back once that children's book comes out, because that would be amazing to talk about that as well. So there's people out there listening mm-hmm. that probably have dealt with this in the past, but maybe have repressed it or maybe afraid to talk about it. So is, you know, with your, whether it's with your nonprofit or your personal experience, mm-hmm. is there something that you would say to that person to kind of reassure them that it's okay to speak their truth? Or I guess,
absolutely.
What would you say to these people?
Here's the thing. You are the absolute authority on your testimony. What does that mean? That nobody can tell you that that's not how your story happened. It is not up for debate. It is your story. And so you are worth being heard. And if nobody else believes you, I promise I do. I will often get asked, well, aren't you afraid that people just make that crap up? And that's kind of like, people are pretty arrogant with me sometimes. And I was like, okay, So this is the question I ask in return. What does that person, so whatever person you think is making it up, what does that person have to gain by making this up? Now, what does that person have to lose? You weigh that out and you tell me now if you think they're making it up. Because they want, people want to ask that, the same thing here in my, I call it Podunk, Missouri. I really do love where I live. We live out in the country, but like in Podunk, Missouri, people are like, you making this up. You're just wanting to tear your daddy's character down. You're wanting to slaughter his reputation. I'm like, it's not about him. It's about me. And it's about my healing. And he made himself part of my story when he chose to use me like a sex toy.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't ask for that to happen. And there is no way that anybody could twist that to make it be okay. I was, like I said, I have memories as early as 2, and it went on for quite a while. And so, you know, you're worth being heard, but more than that, you're worth the work to overcome. It doesn't have to define you. And so like this point in time forward, like choose to be the change that you want in your life. Choose to be the change that you want for your family. And like I said, when I started my healing journey, I didn't think I was worth the work, but I thought my kids were worth the work and I wanted better for my kids. And healing is a gift. And like with any gift, Noah, if I gave you a gift today and it was this beautifully wrapped gift, you have a choice to either receive that gift or reject that gift. Or even slide that gift off in a closet and forget about it for a while. But healing's the same way. Like it's there and it's for everybody, but you have to be willing to receive that gift. And then when you accept that responsibility of healing and doing your part, then it really is for everyone else around you.
Well said. I have one more question, I promise.
Okay.
So we talked about what you would say to people who have had this happen to them, who maybe feel a little scared to speak their truth.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to someone on how to be a positive ally, like those that hear others' truths? I mean, what's something that you would say to them, or how should they be when it comes to that? Because we already talked about how a lot of people just want to kind of put the earmuffs on, and especially if it's somebody that they know and it happened by somebody that they know.
Yep. If somebody chooses to trust you and you've made it that far, like you have a relationship with them in some form or fashion, you know, reaffirming them, I believe you. If it is a child who is opening up about that, understand that it is your job to help them get further help. So that may mean absolutely reporting to the authorities. But here's the deal. When I deal with like 12 to 17 year olds, because 18 are considered an adult, but 12 to 17 year olds, I generally, if I feel like something's getting ready to come where I would have to make a phone call, I'll kind of pause the conversation and I'll say, now listen, you know, I trust you and I love you. You know, this is my language, but like before you say any more, I want you to know that part of my job to protect you means that if you let me know something's going on, that I'm going to have to make a phone call and report that. Now, I'm going to be in this journey with you. You know, you're not just going to go away, you know, but you also have to be real and understanding you can't guarantee the outcome.
Sure.
You know, like I'm here. I believe you. And I want to be a safe person for you. And this is why I paused that conversation. When I was 14 and I opened up about my abuse at a camp, the adults who were in charge of me at that point in time called family services and never had a conversation with me prior to that. So here family services gets involved in my life. And I remember going through a season where I felt betrayed.
Sure.
And I was angry at these people. And this is why. I had no control over the abuse that I went through. And now I felt like I absolutely had no control over what was currently going on in my life. So it was another form of betrayal after already the initial betrayal by my dad. And a lot of people don't understand that. So when you have no control over the abuse, the betrayal in that aspect, if you stop with those kids who are mature enough, like if you feel like they're getting ready to something, it helps put them in control of something that they've had no control over.
Sure.
It's part of the healing journey. And probably people won't agree with me that 100%, but I am telling you that as somebody myself who has went through that and others that I have helped guide them, I have never had a student who never not opened up after that. Actually, they felt more relief because they had some sense of control. So if a child younger than that would open up, you're going to have to be the one to call, because you have to do what's best for that child. And I don't care if it's your relative. I don't care if it's your best friend. I don't care. What are you, what's holding you back? The answer is always fear. Mm-hmm. So you're, and I'm going back to, you would rather not disrupt your pleasant little world.
Sure.
And you would have rather this child continued being endured in the things of being betrayed by somebody who should, they should be able to trust. You know, it's very black and white in my head. I don't play patty cake. And so, not with that. And then if it was your best friend, you know, say we're adults and it's a friend of yours, whether male or female or whatever, you know, and they're like, man, this has just really got me messed up. You know, and I didn't think that it was a big deal in my life. Like it only happened, blah, blah, blah. Or maybe they feel like they had some ownership in that, because like sometimes they've been betrayed and maybe they were a 14-year-old and they were flattered by an 18-year-old who was a senior in high school, but really that 18-year-old groomed them, made them feel special, utilized them for their needs and threw them to the side. And they didn't realize that they were even perpetrated at that point in time. They just thought they were special because this 18-year-old was showing them some attention. Maybe it's a friend who thinks it hasn't been a big deal, but at some point in time in their life, it's still wrecking them in some form or fashion. It's messing up some current relationships or, you know, how they're functioning in current day life. The best thing to do is to always say, I believe you. Thank you for sharing that with me. And, you know, let me help find some resources that can help you overcome this. Like, you know, do you want to go to counseling? I recommend, if people are really triggered and they're struggling with that rage that comes out of being triggered, or they're not sleeping at night, kind of triggered. Most people who have been sexually assaulted or sexually abused have PTSD, like 100%, especially if it's been repetitive, you have PTSD. Sure. I had PTSD. And the best resource that I found to really work through that part of that is EMDR therapy. Hands down, you have to find somebody who knows what they're doing. There's a lot of great resources out there. It's very distinctly different from traditional therapy, because once you do the work, you don't have to go back and do the work. Like I sleep at night. I didn't realize I did it before, but like I'm not triggered anymore. Like I don't have to avoid anything with my husband or with others. There's not smells or whatever else. Like I'm free from that. And that part is through EMDR therapy. And then there are other things through the curriculum that I created that are nuggets to be able to understand stepping stones that get you to where you want to be, you know, and it's not a traditional, it's probably not what people expect. I get that often, like, this is not what I was expecting. And I was like, well, then honestly, you haven't tried it. So it's worth trying something new, sure. You know, and it's through practical ways of understanding and working on relationships and working with yourself. And it's set at a pace that you can work it yourself. You don't have to be in a group setting. I do have facilitators that do it in group settings, but you can do the curriculum on your own, or sit there with a friend, have somebody who's going to be that accountability person. If you need that person in the room, so to speak, I'm somebody who processes out loud. I kind of like to be able to brainstorm out loud as thoughts come to me and be like, oh, and then I can just kind of let it go, sure, because I processed it out loud. Be that safe person for somebody that when they do trust you, don't go share their stuff with everybody else. And here's the thing, you don't need all the details. My husband does not know 100% of the details of everything that I survived, because he don't need to know all the 100%. He knows enough.
Right.
Like, he don't need to know all the 100% details. And it's not that I have secrets from him, but like all it would do is build rage in him and it wouldn't be helpful, you know, because he is a protector. And whatnot, but you can be a confidant for somebody else. Like you can be that ally. You can be on somebody's team, but like that comes with showing that you're honorable and that you're trustworthy. And I promise that if you're willing to do that, you will have the opportunity, because the numbers are huge. You know, start normalizing having conversations that like, oh my gosh, did you know? Or like, I can't believe that somebody was betrayed like that. Or like, because people will be like, oh my gosh, well, that was me too. Really? And not like, really, like, oh my gosh, yeah. I can't believe that happened. Like, oh my gosh, like I never had an idea, but like, have you healed from that? Like, does it still affect you? you know, I had the analogy of a glass that I use in the front part of my curriculum. And there's three glasses on a silver tray. And the first glass is just, they're all identical to start with, but like the first glass is broken beyond repair. I mean, it's shattered. And then the second glass is full of like used motor oil and rocks and sticks and all this other stuff. It's full of things that it was never intended to carry. Mm. It's not being used for its original purpose by no means. But the third glass is transparent. And it's used for what it's, what it was created for, you know, and there's, in that transparency is our truth and being able to not have to hide darkness that has happened. And, you know, for many of us that have been on a healing journey, like we started out feeling broken beyond repair. And then like, well, we're carrying somebody else's junk around because they forced it up on us. And maybe we went to some counseling or we did whatever, and we kind of puke all of that stuff out. But the glass, even after puking all that stuff out, it still has the residue of the other stuff. And so like, that's kind of where I was at in my healing journey for a while. And then I realized that with the right tools, the only difference between that glass and the beautiful glass that was clear and transparent and healed was a little bit of work and the right tools, but it had the potential to look identical to that, to be able to be not carrying around what it was intentionally or what it was to be used for its original purpose. And so that's possible for everybody. Like, we don't have to settle for being broken. Like, others made us feel like damaged goods. Others made us feel broken beyond repair, but that's not your identity. That's not who you are. You know, you don't have to prove yourself to anybody. Mm. Like, just be you, but allow yourself really the freedom, because who you are didn't happen overnight. And I think that was probably the hardest part of my healing journey, is realizing that who I had become at 32 didn't happen overnight, and that it was going to take some time to heal. It's not going to be this microwave healing. And so as others choose to heal along with me, understanding that it's one step at a time, but like, when you start stepping forward, the work that you did yesterday doesn't have to be redone today. And that we're always moving forward, always a work in progress.
Yeah. I really like that. I think that's actually a great way to end too. That's a nice little note to end on. So tell the listeners, where can they get more information? I'll make sure to put your information in the show notes. So we'll touch base before this airs, but yeah, you know, where can people find you?
I'm on Facebook as just Amber McCutcheon. I know you'll tag my name in there. There's a public figure page that I actually just started not too long ago, to communicate with a lot of other people besides what my close network would be. But my website is the www.thenumber2andthentryhope.com. So it's just super simple to find that. That's where you'll find the curriculum at. You'll find a little bit of the history of how hope began. I am founder and executive director, but I'm just one of the team. You know, it's kind of my story. I'm the face of that, kind of help launching that. But there are so many others who are part of the team as well, helping to facilitate. And if you ever look at my logo, the O is actually two arms that are linked together. And the idea is that when we can link arms and we can march forward, you know, that's a confident move, and we're marching forward on this healing journey together. So it's about an army rising up out of the ashes that were meant to destroy our lives, and being able to bring good out of the very things that were to meant to kill us, destroy us.
Very cool. Well, Amber, thank you so much for being on my podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Definitely. All right, everybody. That was this week's episode of the Coffee Time Podcast with Noah Kinsey. So what did you think? Do you agree, disagree? Were there points I missed? Let me know what you think. In the show notes, there's links to all my social media accounts. Please comment, reply, message. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. And make sure to become a member of my Patreon. It's at www.patreon.com/Noah Kinsey. There's a lot of exclusive content. It's just a great place with a lot of fun perks and some fantastic discussion.